Welcome to The Lorraine Murphy Show. I'm an entrepreneur on my second business, a mentor, an author, wife to a fellow entrepreneur, and mother to a magical little girl. On my podcast, I explore topics that fascinate me that will help you unlock ideas to rise even higher in your life. Myself and my special guests will be talking entrepreneurship and how to build better businesses, organization and figuring out how to get more shit done quicker and smarter, staying in touch with our soul, and how to blend business babies with real babies. Let's jump in to this week's episode. Welcome to this week's episode of The Lorraine Murphy Show. I cannot believe it, but this is the very last episode in the Chicken Soup Conversation season. I've absolutely loved doing this season. It's been, for obvious reasons, a total soul top up. And it's been awesome to hear your feedback on them as well. So thank you to everyone who sent me all these emails and DMs and Insta comments about how much you're enjoying this season. It's been an absolute joy to create this with you, and also an honor to get to share the amazing people in my life with you, my beautiful listeners. So as you know, if you've listened to a few of these Chicken Soup Conversations by now, my intent with this season is to welcome you into conversations with my anchors each week as we share memories, funny stories and life lessons together, and no doubt give you a much more rounded perspective on who I am. Now, before I jump into this week's Chicken Soup Conversation, I wanted to remind you I am still very, very keen to get your feedback on the Lorraine Murphy Show, because I am... As you're listening to this, I'm coming to the end of a whole week off, which is where I've been percolating on what to do next in terms of my content, and also just getting a really good brain break after a couple of months of pretty intensive hustling on the business side and personal side. For any of you who are also have kids at home or have had kids at home until quite recently. So I would love to get your feedback on this show, because I am... Yes, planning future seasons, and it's always brilliant to be informed by listeners and what they're really getting a kick out of, and also what they would like to hear more of from me. So if you would like to fill out the survey, you can access it via the link in the show notes for this episode, or you can just go to my Instagram profile and you can click on my link and my profile there, and you'll be taken through to the link there to the survey. It takes, I think, about 4.5 minutes to do. And any of everyone who completes the survey, one person will be winning a free spot on my brand new program, which is launching next week. And it's all about living a more creative life. I'm so excited to bring it out into the world next week to you. And speaking of that program, if you're not already getting my emails, jump onto my website or jump onto the link on my Insta profile and sign up, because my email gang always get the first heads up on anything new that I'm creating. So all of that will be out in the world next week. And yeah, my email buddies get everything first. So let's jump into this week's Chicken Soup Conversation, which is with who I call my soulie, my soul sister, Rishenda Vermeulen. Rishenda and I both started social media agencies within a month of each other way back in 2012, and we grew very close during that experience. Her business, Integrity, is a digital marketing agency that has won a ton of awards. We've actually been up for several awards together, and helps businesses, organizations, and not-for-profits alike to help good grow. That's their motto as a team. Rishenda has been a total rock for me, not just in business, but in the realm of relationships and motherhood too. We've supported each other through really tough times and also celebrated together. We've even been up against each other, as I said, for many awards over the years. I am 100% convinced that this woman is some kind of earth angel, and she has lit up my life since I first met her at a business event 8 years ago. In myself and Rishenda's chat, we speak about our first meeting and our first impressions of each other, and hers was a total surprise to me. Our mirrored lives, as we call it, of getting married and starting a business in the same year and also becoming mothers. Her unique leadership approach and how she has made it an extension of who she is as a person. How she and her husband Kyle maintain such an incredible growth mindset individually, but also together. Their 4 miscarriages and how they navigated that pain in their family. And one story she shared, she hadn't told me this before, made me cry in our interview. How ISO life is going for her in Melbourne. why we think our relationship works, and the greatest thing that we believe we have taught each other. I am so honored to bring you my chat with Roshanda. She is, as I said, some kind of earth angel, and I think she's just the perfect note to wrap up the chicken soup conversation season on. So without further ado, I bring you my beautiful soulie, Roshanda Vermeulen. So I am very excited to have my gorgeous BFF, Roshanda Vermeulen, on the show. Thank you so much for joining me, my dear.
Thank you, Lorraine, and for being my BFF.
You're very welcome. It's pretty funny doing this because I think with this season, it's almost just forcing my friends to hang out with me for an hour and a bit. It's like, be on my podcast just so you'll hang out with me in ISO.
What a slog. Love it.
So we're recording this on Easter Monday afternoon. I've got our child down in front of Frozen 2. She's very specific. We can't watch Frozen 1 anymore. It's done. What are your family doing right now? You're recording up in your spare bedroom now, office.
I am. I've organized for my brother to come over. He's skateboarding with my little four-year-old now. And my husband's working in the other room. We've both had to work a little bit over the weekend, but not too much. That's all right.
Nice. I love your brother. He's so good with the kids.
He's very sweet and
he just
very
must
enthusiastic.
Be like the coolest uncle in the world.
He is. He's that's awesome. The benefit of having a brother that's 11 years younger than you, that you change their diapers. So now they're like paying it back.
Yeah. Oh, he's so good to them because obviously we spent some time with you over the New Year's. We stayed in Airbnb right near you and Kyle and Ashley. You're 4-year-old now? She's almost five.
Yes. Yeah. Four. Yeah.
And I got to hang out with all the Vermeulen siblings, which was awesome because you've talked about them so many times in our relationship. And yeah, just to see your brother and how cool he was with them. I was like, can Mikey just come home to our house, please? So, hon, thank you for joining, as I said. And I'd love to, by way of introduction, so I've talked about you a bit touched on you in all of my books in one way, shape, or form, I think. I've kind of quoted the Roshanda-isms and with my mentees, I talk about you, not all the time, but I'll touch on a lot of the stuff that you and I talk about or that you've taught me or the amazing stuff that you're doing in your business. Would you give us a bit of a kind of get everyone else up to speed on your life to date in terms of, obviously, you started your own business the same time as I started my first one, marriage, kids. Would you give us a bit of a, almost like a how did you get here conversation?
Yeah, who is this woman that you're listening to? Yeah, so I'm still surprised that I'm on a podcast like this talking about starting a business. I was born in Amsterdam and raised in Queensland to some immigrant parents. My mother's Dutch, my father's Egyptian, and they had businesses kind of their whole life out of necessity, really, like by having limited, language skills and that sort of thing. And I swore to myself, because I saw how stressful businesses are or could be, that I would never start at one. But you know how that story ends.
So did your mom have a business as well? I know your dad still does.
He worked with my dad in his businesses, yeah.
So, hon, just to pause you there. So you've obviously said that you're half Egyptian, half Dutch, which just makes you look like the most incredible looking person. You've got jet black, super straight hair and a beautiful like tanned complexion, but then these electric blue eyes. It's quite crazy.
You are too kind. This is why we're friends.
Yeah.
Say beautiful things like that.
So I needed to step in and say that. So yes, can you tell us a bit? So when did you actually move from Amsterdam to Queensland?
I was 4 years old, so my daughter's age. And at that time in Europe, it wasn't a very accepting place for people that were mixed backgrounds. So they thought they'd come to Australia where people were more accepting here, and they were back then. So it was a very wise move to immigrate here, but it didn't mean that life was easy. And so, the ups and downs of my dad starting businesses meant, 1 week we were high flying and another week we were bankrupt. And it was my parents were amazing, but it was just a lot of stress I could see that business could put on a family and on life. And so I decided I wanted to help people and became a social worker and worked with all different kinds of people, like the long-term unemployed in Ipswich in Queensland, to people with disabilities in the US. I ended up in the US for love, another reason. And then during the global financial crisis, I started working in marketing instead of working on a malaria campaign for World Vision. And that move kind of propelled, I guess, this next role and purpose in my life, and I just fell in love with digital marketing specifically. And yeah, fast forward 5 years later, I'd started an agency to help the not-for-profit sector grow, really. So help not-for-profits and for-purpose businesses and governments grow online. And that's now a team of 20 that was started, 8 years ago. So
20 people now?
Yeah, we're at 20.
Oh, my God. I thought it was like 11 last time I talked to you. It's amazing, hon. Wow. And you've got your own three-story office now.
We do, although it's not in use right now.
No, true.
We're all remote.
Like, so I'm so glad I got that amazing three-story office that I can't even go into right now.
Oh, the most exciting part, this sounds so dumb, it wasn't like the size of the building or the client base or the awards or anything like that. It was like having a sign on the front door.
I totally get that. I totally get it. Our office, I think it was, oh God, it was probably like the second office we moved into at the Remarkables Group. And one, it, we sublet like an area off in another agency, a bigger agency. And one of my questions, like, can we just have a sign on the street, please? And Mark, the CEO, was like, yes, sure. I was like, oh my God, this is so exciting. It felt like a real business for the first time.
It is something about an old school sign that just makes you think, I'm legit. Even though you shouldn't question that after this many years, you do.
Yes. That's brilliant. I love it. And you met your beautiful Kyle. When did you guys actually meet? Because you got married in 2012.
Yes. Yeah, we met in the US not that long after the GFC. I think it was maybe a couple months before it started happening. And he was working in the video department, and it was just lust at first sight. Just from the first moment we saw each other, it was really intense, because even though we were from these really different backgrounds, like he's from the middle of America, from a very conservative family, and had just moved to Seattle. But we were these kindred spirits, even though everything on paper was really different. Like, we both had such a passion for social justice and a love of family, but also this like heart for adventure and never wanting to be like tied to the same place. And so in each other, we kind of found comfort and solace at like finding this person that gets me, even though we're so different.
You really are. It's fascinating. Yeah. And our first meeting, do you remember the first time we met? Because I can remember very clearly. I don't want to make you feel guilty if you don't.
No, I definitely remember it, because you were so salty. It was
salty? What does that even mean?
So when we were at a bloggers conference, it was the Digital Parents Conference.
Yes.
And one of your future to be bloggers, who I was working with at World Vision, so I hadn't started my business yet, she had told me that you were going to start a business and you were all going out on your own. And
yes, that's so true, because I hadn't actually launched the business yet.
Launched it. We were both at this conference, and I just remember being so intimidated by you, because you're so fashionable and beautiful, and I felt like this not-for-profit bum sitting there. And and I remember like asking you something innocently about the business, and it was meant to be like a full surprise, and it would have been, you know, a risk for anyone to know it at that point. So she should definitely not have told me that. But that was our first introduction of you being like a bit surprised.
Really? I don't remember that at all. It's funny, isn't it, how you remember things? Because in my head, like, the business had launched and we were talking very openly. So you had already launched Integrity, had you?
No. I think I was either decided I would, but it wasn't public yet, because I think we launched within a month or something of each other.
Yeah. Well, I was May. I think you were June. Yeah, that's it.
And but it was definitely under wraps for you. So like, I shouldn't have been asking you. And you know, when you first start something, you're so scared too.
Oh, I know.
But then I remember that after that, I think we met up at another conference, and that's when we really like hit it off and started sharing our wounds and battle scar story.
Yes, I remember. So I remember the first time we met was at that conference. And yeah, I totally had changed that in my head, that it was before. Sorry, we both ordered lunch, but we hadn't. And they did this speed dating thing where you had to like go. I mean, I fucking hate doing that stuff. Like, it just makes me die. Even the thought of doing one now makes me die inside. And we had to, like walk around and like say hello to five new people or something. And I saw you, and I just immediately, I mean, I wasn't lost at first sight, because that would be weird. But I think immediately there was some kind of, I want to say recognition or something. There was something there that, and I probably didn't think about it very consciously at the time, but there was definitely something there that I went, oh, this chick is interesting. And not that we'd go on to have this amazing friendship, but there was definitely something remarkable about you, because I think about how many people you and I would have met at that conference. Like, I think it was probably at least 100 people. It was down in Melbourne, I remember. And you were the only one I remember. You know, isn't that weird?
Oh, yeah. I remember, you know, looking back on it now, and even just looking back on the first kind of years of our friendship, we had no idea how unique that would be, because there's not many young women that start businesses. So we were both, I think, you know, you were 29, I think I was 30 starting the business. There's not many young women, there's not many that find each other, and there's not many that have successful trajectories. So to have found each other and kind of grown up together through growing business.
Well, that's arguable if I'm grown up yet or not.
I feel like things don't freak us out like they used to, maybe.
That's very true.
Maybe that's my definition of growing up, freaking out less. But yeah, that was really unique and really special. And I don't think I got that until I started going to more like female founders events and things like that, to see that, oh, this thing that Lorraine and I have, that's a special thing. And that's something that I want to keep and protect and like just appreciate.
Yeah. No, thank you. That makes total sense. And I think, I mean, I don't remember our second two or three meetings, but I do remember there used to be, I don't think they do it anymore, the big Pro Blogger conference happened every year. And I went there, God, I would have went like 5-6 years in a row. It was like the place to be, given that my first business was influencer marketing, and your business was in digital marketing. And you and Kyle used to work behind the scenes on that as well. And I remember you and I had agreed that we were going to go together. It was at the QT on the Gold Coast. I think it might have been the first year they made it up to the Gold Coast. And we were both so excited. We'd gotten like this twin room rate where we were going to have like dinner and everything. And it was honestly like I was going on a dirty weekend. I was so excited just to have you to myself. And not, well, obviously at this big conference. But I was so excited about it. And then you just emailed, like, texting back and forth about it. And you were like, you just kind of casually slipped in that Kyle, your husband, was going to be there as well. But you were going to be sleeping in the room with me.
Yeah, that's right.
Hilarious. You parked in. Do you remember that guy, Charles, who was your...
He had to check.
Kyle wasn't invited.
That's right. I remember so specifically, because we had to go for work. I think I was speaking and Kyle was doing some kind of video thing. I can't remember. But I remember like saying, no, Lorraine and I only ever usually get an hour together. Like, you know, obviously us being in different cities, me in Melbourne, you in Sydney. And this was like our time. And he was like, I get it, babe. Do what fills your cup. So yeah, it was very sweet.
It was very sweet, but bless you. So, and obviously now that we've got kids, we probably wouldn't be as eager to do
that's
that.
True. But, yeah, I don't know. The girls do like hanging out, so maybe they would.
And I still remember, so we had the QT. There was like an unlimited seafood, or unlimited buffet for dinner. Oh. So we had that, and we had two bottles of Spanish wine. And to this day, every time I smell or taste Tempranillo, I just remember that I was so drunk, like two bottles of red wine. Oh, my God. Yeah.
It was that time. Like, I think, were we like 1 year in the business, I think, or 2 years in? That's the hardest time. And it just felt like we're both just kind of pouring our hearts out with like how hard it was. And just like having someone that accepts and knows what you're going through was so rare. Like no one understands. Family doesn't understand. Friends definitely don't understand. And you don't have like the track record yet to say it's worth it, so you're questioning it yourself.
God, that's so and true. That's I really powerful that's what you I said remembered. There,
hon. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. But that's the thing, isn't it? And so much of it is like for the first kind of, I don't know, I mean, you've had your business a lot longer now, because I obviously exited mine a couple of years ago. But yeah, if you don't have any track record to success, then you're kind of going constantly, is this worth it? Like, is this how it should be, and how should it be? And I think that's what I've loved about our conversations over the years, particularly when we were both in the same industry and we had a lot of shared connections and we'll kind of support each other. There's a few times we were up for the same award, which is just awesome. And we were just so supportive of each other. And I think it's that thing of like, is this normal? You know, you're constantly going, is this normal? Is this normal? And just to be able to drop your guard with someone like you and go, you know, just for it to be normalized. And I remember
anyone who's read, any of my listeners who've read Remarkability, and I talk about in Remarkability, Black November, which was like that horrible, horrible period I went through, 18 months, and exactly, you're so right, that's the toughest time, 18 months into the business, I went through a really, really tough time with it. And I remember you were up in Sydney for something, and we literally had like 1 hour, if less than that, to meet up. We met at the MLC Centre just off Martin Place in Sydney. And we had a cup of coffee or whatever we're doing. And we met like outside sitting in the MLC Centre. And I said to you, I've been really struggling. Like, it's been actually, you know what? I was just about to go in and see my coach Ronan. So I was obviously seeing him. And yeah, he was one of the key things that I started doing as a result of kind of Black November. And it was so sad because you said to me, oh, that's, I just had no idea you were going through the very same thing at the same time as I was. Like, you'd been through the very, very same thing. And yeah, I thought that was quite sad that we hadn't some, I guess that we weren't more in touch day to day or week by week, yeah, that we kind of saved it until we had our big catch ups. And we were
both so
lonely and struggling on our own with this thing that it's almost like, you know, the problem shared would be a problem halved. I think, yeah, we could have really supported that. That's I mean, it's not really a regret, but I wish that we had have.
Yeah, no, I feel that way more too. I definitely feel that way because I think, you know, and most people don't know to do that in the beginning because every day can feel like survival mode, and your instinct isn't, oh, who am I going to talk that can help me? It's like, how am I going to get through this day?
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, being able to sit and see, and for both of us, you know, it always came down to people and finances. They were the things that would stress us out the most or had us most worried, like, how am I going to pay my people, or is what's being expected of me as a boss, is that reasonable or unreasonable? There are all these like really human things. I mean, obviously the finance stuff isn't superhuman, that's more sales related, but just being able to talk it out when there's so many, I guess, emotions or sensitivities involved would have been really helpful. And I think we learnt from that, though. We learnt to lean on each other a little bit earlier. And I think that's, for me, been the great thing about the business growing as it has, is now, you know, at this size anyway, I have two other leaders. That, you know, you can do that with operationally. And you, I guess that's a strain. I mean, you must have felt that at different stages as well, Lorraine. Like, you need that day-to-day support check-in to like co-manage and co-own problems.
It's hard. It's so true, isn't it? It's like those early days with the most lonely, almost, because your team does grow. And actually, quite soon after you and I would have had that coffee, I hired Sarah, who's, funnily enough, was my podcast guest as we're recording this. She was my podcast to the first chicken soup conversation in the season. And so, yeah, you're right. Those early days are definitely the loneliest because you are making all of the decisions. And I often think, and I've said this to a lot of my mentees when I've worked with them, is when you're hiring someone, as that senior level kind of support, it's not necessarily about the skills that they can bring and take off your plate. It's also about the emotional support that they can give you. And it sounds very self-absorbed, but that's it. You know, if you're in there trying to figure out problems together, I think particularly as women, you don't necessarily need someone who's just going to come in and go, okay, I've got this, I'm going to sort this all out. It's also like, how are you doing, and let's figure it out together. I think it makes a huge difference. So it's so good that yeah, you've got that in your business, and I've got that in my business in a different way now with Michelle, my business manager, which is really great. Can I talk to you a bit about your leadership approach, because you are I think you're one of the most potent leaders I know, and in terms of, you know, someone who gets so much out of their teams. But I think you go about it in such a soft way. And I remember you and I at some kind of, again, some conference over the years together, and you saying to me, I've got this whole idea for this idea of soft-hearted leadership, because I think very often, fuck knows, I'm living with my husband ex-military and, you know, is very military in his leadership style. Not to say that he's not, you know, really kind and all those beautiful things, he is, but I think particularly for new people who he starts to lead, it's I think he can be quite intimidating. Like, he is very military, and I think it's been a big lesson learning for him and I, both in our relationship, like him learning to be that bit softer and me learning to be a bit more robust and not take everything that he says as, you know, an immediate cut down. He's just being very direct, but also he kind of, that translates through to his leadership style. And I think with you, something I really see is that you are very soft-hearted, but you're not a walkover. So how do you walk the line? Can you give us a bit of an idea of what, and this isn't, you know, chicken soup conversations isn't about how to run a great business, but I would like to touch on it because I do believe all of us are leaders, whether we've got our own businesses or not. You know, we're leading our kids as a starting yep. point. We're leading our friends and our family members. So how would you describe your leadership style?
Oh, Lorraine, this is hard, especially since I feel like I'm always such a work in progress. But I think, honestly, it's probably heavily influenced by my heart for justice and my experience as a social worker before going into starting a business. So, you know, when I wake up every day, I think the thing that lights my soul on fire is knowing that I'm making an impact on the world. And where I see that is obviously in the clients that I help, but it's also in the people that are around me. I know that the conversations or the stress that people can bring to work has a massive effect on the rest of their life. And so being able to see someone that's working with you as a whole person and that they have things that they're passionate about, interested in, that are at work and also outside of work, and just trying to really know who they are, I think is really important, whether it's, you know, we're at 20 people or whether it was just me. Like, I think one of the things that I guess the team would say is that I know things about them. I know about who they are, what they're interested in, who's in their life, what's important to them, and they would know that same thing for me. So regardless of the style and or how I lead them at work, just knowing them and them knowing me, I think is really central because it humanizes the workplace.
Yeah. And that's such a good way of putting it. That's what you do. You humanize the workplace. And do you mind if I mention when you've had a few miscarriages, God help you, you've had a really tough time on that front, but I was so touched when you actually told your team very early on. Like, it was at a point where you wouldn't have needed to tell anyone, like it didn't need to be said. But you told your team, like, we've lost a baby and you know, obviously we're heartbroken and you were going through a really difficult time. And I guess that gave them the opportunity to be there for you and Kyle. Whereas I think there are a lot of leaders that would go, well, no, that's my personal hat on and they don't need to know that. And almost they wouldn't want to look less in their, not that you should look less, but you know what I mean? They don't want to be vulnerable, you know, running around.
And at different times, like, obviously I have the track record of having many miscarriages. So we've had our fourth, but now pregnant with, you know, the sixth baby now. So that's exciting. And 26 weeks, so all safe. So we can talk about this, you know, with happiness and celebration. But some of those miscarriages were appropriate to share. Others weren't. You know, some were, you know, right in the midst of it and I had to leave work that day and share what was going on, and also to allow them to see how serious it was and to have the freedom to step in and take over. But then other times, you know, after you've had a few and they see you go through pain, like, that's also unfair to, you know, have them carry some of that stress or strain. So, you know, there's been times where the announcements have been lighter. It's really trying to read the situation in the room. Part of, you know, some of this stuff is knowing that we had this history with miscarriages. I would tell them quite early that I was pregnant because it allowed me to take better care of myself. So if they saw that I was pregnant, they knew that I wasn't just acting strange in a meeting in the morning because I was tired. They knew I was at half function, I guess. So it was giving, because it's a lot of first trimesters to be in, which, you know, it is not a fun trimester. So I think it's that delicate balance of wanting to share with them, but also taking care of yourself too, because I think the more humanity sometimes you give, the more is received in you. And I think that's where you're seen as more human as well, and there's more realistic expectations that are put on you.
I love that. Thank you. Now, I totally took you on that tangent, but I thought it was important to unpack that one a little bit more. So you said the first one was to humanize the workplace and be more human as a leader.
Yeah. I think the other is just clarity, like having clear expectations of what's expected on people, from their job descriptions to key performance indicators to, on a daily basis, when we're looking at task lists or delegating, by being a clear leader, it allows for more room to be human in other areas. You're not saying, you know, this is what's expected of you, how can I help you with this, versus, oh, you're having a tough, you know, that when people get into the friend zone with staff, that can completely blur the expectations. So mm-hmm. I think when you keep the kind of the ability to humanize a situation with clear expectations, one isn't sacrificed for the other. So you're not being so rigid that you lose the person's humanity, but you're also not being overly relational that it blurs the expectation.
Mm. It's so, almost like they're a really good check and balance for each other.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. And then I think the last one for me, and this is probably, I guess, a little bit more of my personality and my upbringing, but I was brought up with a very encouraging mum. And, you know, she could see the best in everyone. Like, she would tell you, Lorraine, when she sees you, how wonderful you are, and 20 things that she's noticed about.
And you do that to people. You are. How lovely is that?
Well, it's just a, like, it's very easy for me to see things that I admire about people, or things that that inspire me, or that just are, you know, it's very easy to say that was great because of these reasons, and you did this really well because of, you know, how you practiced that, or you structured this email really well, and here's why. And so I guess if something I've learned along the way is that started as just encouragement. But as I've learned more about what makes great feedback, I've learned that high-performance teams require a positive to negative ratio of feedback at 6-1. So the more positive and clear feedback you get, so not fluffy, the more it shows people what to press into and what to do more of, which increases the outcomes or outputs of your team. So not, and a part of that is also because they feel more safe for when that one critique comes, or when the they feel more safe to take risks and experience failure. So I think that's, I guess that's that blend, if I'd say, if it exists, it's like humanize, clear expectations, and honing, like leaning harder on positive feedback to offset critical feedback.
Mm, yeah, that's so good. So I was actually, I mean, it's enough for a couple of questions down, but I want to jump on that right now, because I actually remember myself and my relationship counselor a few years ago saying that to us, that it's she talked about in terms of bids in a relationship, that you need to have 5 positive bids for every 1 negative bid.
Oh, yeah.
And that's how relationships are nurtured and grown, because obviously if you've got more negative bids than positive bids, then the relationship's heading south pretty quickly. So I'd love to almost like jump straight into the relationship stuff, because I know I talk about you with my friends and with my mentees, or I've touched on you a few times with the podcast or whatever it might be. But something I respect so massively about you and Kyle is just how you work on your relationship, and how you bolster your relationship, and you have a relationship that each of you can be the individuals that you want to be, and you're stronger together than you are apart. Does that make sense? Like, you each pursue what you want to do. Yeah, but it's true. I've seen it for years, and I know that's also not saying that you guys haven't had your tough times, and that's something I love about you and I, is that we can talk very openly about our marriages, because I don't know what happens at a certain age you get to, or whatever happens, or people have been married a certain amount of time, like, we don't share our relationships anymore. It's almost like that's just, and I think often because if you're in a relationship, you've been together for a few years, you may have kids and your friends have kids, like, it's almost like that person's part of the gang. So it's kind of hard to talk about someone's partner without feeling that you're kind of going behind their back or something, because the partner's also a friend. But I do love that you and I have been able to talk about our relationships in, you know, in a lot of candor over the years, and it's been a huge support to me. Do you think that you take any of your leadership style into your relationship with Kyle?
Oh, I wonder whether it's the opposite way around. Do I take I think I probably take elements of our relationship into relationships at work. I think with Kyle and I, you know, to be candid, we weren't brought up with great examples of marriage. You know, my parents are divorced, and it was messy, and it still, to a certain extent, is messy now. And Kyle's
family are still together, but it's messy. Mm-hmm. And when we met each other, we were both just really committed to building a great marriage at all costs, and knowing that we kind of were really aware that we didn't know how, but that we are also really committed to like each other and, you know, building a better world. It wasn't just about us and our marriage. It was us being together. Like, we met as these young, naive world vision kids that believed they could change the world. And so our purpose as a couple has been sustaining our love to do something bigger than us as well. And, you know, for me, my faith has a lot to do with that too. But it always felt like our relationship always felt significant and more than about two people, I guess. So with that, it meant, like, you know, very early on, way before we ever needed it, like when things got tough, going into counseling. And I realize now, Esther Perel, you've probably heard of her, Lorraine,
yes,
right?
I love her.
She, I heard her once do this podcast on this young Mexican couple that comes to her, and they've just gotten married and they've just kind of started to figure things out, and they're so beautiful. It's one of my favorite recordings. And she says, you know, you two coming together, the beauty is you're fresh dough. Like, you're like working with fresh dough, and you can figure out how to kind of wrestle through things before you've become kind of hard, stale bread. And I realize now, looking back on it, that's what we did early on. Is we were very young and still forming and learning how to fight well and learning how to wrestle well and learning that, like, you know, none of us are perfect, and that, you know, not everything's Kyle's fault if we have a fight. Well, me learning that, and him seeing not everything's my fault. And yeah, and I think the ability to wrestle with difficult things early on, and like, we went from having, you know, these intense screaming matches or not talking to each other, to now we can have really healthy conflict and argue while holding hands and remembering who each other is and that, and the best things about each other. But that's been, you know, 10 years of work. And ultimately, I think we're both just really committed to not wanting to lose each other and wanting to not just have an average marriage, but have a great marriage. And we're not naive enough to see that that doesn't take a lot of hard work. So I guess that's kind of that the foundation. But the other is, like, going back to what we're talking about feedback and the 6-to-1 ratio. One of the things our counselor said in the early days, because I'd mentioned something that I appreciated about Kyle, and she said, say it out loud. Every time that you think something that you like or appreciate about your partner, say it out loud, say it to them, and say it often, because it will rewire your brain to think about them in a positive way.
I love that.
And it was the best advice. And that's probably one of those loops that I bring out to work as well. It's like, yes, when I think of something positive, say it out loud, say it, and it will. And I think so, you know, regardless of how bad a fight or difficulty we've been in, I think we both have this bank of remembering all of these incredible things about each other. So, yeah, I feel like I've just got into a real word vomit.
I'm hanging in every word, and I know everyone listening will be as well. Can we talk a little bit about your miscarriages, if you're happy to do so? Because so you had two miscarriages, and then you had your beautiful Ashna, and then you had two more last year, and now you're pregnant again. So I was at your house for New Year's Eve this year, and you announced that you were pregnant. You were only 10 weeks, and I was like, oh, you know, it's like, I'm so happy for you, but I don't want to get excited. And obviously we've been staying in touch since New Year's anyway, but I'm so happy for you. And I think having had two miscarriages ourselves now, I think that it's always very bittersweet when your friend tells you that they're pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you lived through more than your bloody fair share of pregnancy announcement with what you'd experienced. And it was such a beautiful thing to be there when you said you were pregnant, because I know, not that anyone needs to be earn, you know, not that they need to earn my happiness for them, but it was just such as it's, I think it's so much extra, more extra special for me as your friend when I know how much you've been through in order to get to the point that you're at then, you know, to get to the 10 week mark. I think it was 10 and a half weeks because you and I went out for, we went out for dessert the following night and, and you were 11 weeks that day. So, I mean, how did you feel? Were you very anxious in this pregnancy in the early days, or did you kind of find some way of just surrendering it? How have you found it so far?
Yeah, I think with this one, I guess like with all of them, you just kind of go into, you become, I guess, a biology expert at the different developmental milestones and at different stages. And I think it wasn't until after that 10-week mark that it started to become and feel real, because all of our miscarriages had been before that date. So all the science was pointing to positive. So I was being, I guess, optimistic but guarded. And I think ultimately, like, I've had a lot of friends that struggle with IVF, a lot of friends, and I know what a blessing it is just to be able to get pregnant. And even though the heartache of those four miscarriages and all of the hopes and dreams, like one of them, oh, I'll never forget, it was, we announced at Ashna's birthday party, it was at her third birthday party, and then the next day went in to have a scan and the heart wasn't beating anymore, and going back to tell all our friends, and the one person I couldn't bear to tell was our four-year-old. And so my husband and my brother and my brother-in-law kind of told her after daycare, and I remember they were all crying.
Oh,
so tender to remember that. And yeah, but I still, in like going through those instances and pain, like it, I still know what a blessing it is. And the thing I would always tell myself is, we'll keep trying until our hearts can't handle it anymore, or until it feels wrong. And like, as in, this doesn't feel like our right call or purpose. And it just didn't get to that point. You know, there was a part time when, you know, especially after speaking to a therapist, I had to be okay with just going on a break, because the logical and the planner part of me is like, oh, geez, the age cap is getting wider and wider and wider. And speaking to a therapist, she was like, forget the age gap for a sec and just, are you actually ready to be pregnant again? You've just gone through a fourth miscarriage. And I had said, no, I'm not, but I feel like I have this ticking clock because Ash is getting older and older, and this baby, the age difference is going to be so big. And she's like, well, what if you just suspended that thought? What's the worst thing that could happen? And it was just the best advice. So we took, you know, 6 months off and spent time on a holiday and working on our marriage and loving each other and recovering from all of these miscarriages. And then the next pregnancy was this one. So it was a beautiful choice. But
I'm still wiping away the tears from that story of the three boys telling Ashna. I mean, my God, what beautiful men you have around you.
We're very, very, very lucky, and it wasn't easy for them.
Oh God, it's a heartbreaker. Can I ask you, so with my, so my kinesiologist's name is Jackie. She's amazing. And she's one of the first person I told was like, we've decided we're going to start trying for a baby. And of course I was like, program me, just program me. And so she was, you know, I was seeing her quite regularly for the 18 months that it took us to get pregnant with Lexi. And, you know, we do muscle, I mean, Jesus, we did everything. And she said to me something, she's got three kids herself, like who are quite grown up now. And she said, you know, I look back at each of my kids and it's not like they each arrived at the perfect time in terms of the date that they were born. But she was like, even when they were like 15, 16, 19, like even then it was like their ages were just perfect for where we were at right now. So she's like, you need to remember that your baby will arrive at the perfect time for you guys and your family. Do you see a reason? I know this may be a tough question to answer, but I feel like you're a thinker like me. Do you think there's a reason that those other four babies didn't arrive for whatever reason? Somehow the timing is best for this one. Or sorry, when I say the first two, I mean, because Ashna arrived, obviously, after the first. And then you had miscarriages, and now you've got this beautiful baby on their way in August. August, yes?
Yes, July, mid-July.
July, sorry, my sister's due August. Yeah. A lot of people due over July, August. I'm trying to keep track of all these due dates. So do you think there is some kind of divine timing around this baby arriving when they're going to be arriving?
Yeah, I definitely do. I think, you know, I remember when Ash was born, our obstetrician had said, you know, it might not have been your plan, but maybe it was a better plan. And I remember just thinking that, like, yeah, if we didn't have those miscarriages, we wouldn't have this person. Like, I didn't really understand that before I was pregnant, because you don't understand that every baby that comes together has a different personality and a different set of genetics. You just think it's my first baby. But when Ash came into the world, and she's just such a fun and beautiful and interesting and just so funny character, like, I couldn't have imagined it not being her. And, you know, we're yet to see that for who baby two is, but the thing I do see is, like, I'm really enjoying this pregnancy and sharing it with her, you know, that she,
yes, she gets it, you know, that's so lovely,
she, like, puts her hands on my belly and loves feeling the kicks and has all these thoughts and feelings about the baby already, and likes to be part of the planning and things that she wouldn't have been able to be, you know, if it was the other babies.
Yes.
Her, like, ability to cognitively understand, and also just even emotionally preparing her for sharing and not being the center of our worlds. That on the family front, I think that 6 month break that Kyle and I were able to take meant being able to go to Europe and meet my for Ashna to meet my grandma, who, you know, now with COVID, I don't know if she would have ever been able to meet her. And and also just from a work point of view, you know, the two leaders that are having the business now, they've joined in the last 18 months and they're exceptional, but it takes time to get used to leading a business. And now, you know, they've had a longer runway to prepare. So it's going to make my maternity leave, even in the midst of a recession, a lot more stable than it would have been. So, you know, amongst all that heartbreak, I see the blessings in it as well.
And I love that. And that's why I felt like I could ask you that question, because I don't think everyone who had experienced that would be able to answer that question. So,
And it's hard to say when, you know, there's so many people out there that are struggling with fertility in general and haven't had, you know, that first pregnancy even yet. So, yeah, I know that I heard someone talk the other day about, don't let what's happened to you in the past have so much power from you that it robs you of joy. And I think that's the element of, like, the past does exist and we have to acknowledge it and acknowledge its pain, but it doesn't have to rob us of our future and our hopes for ourselves or our family.
You need your own podcast, Tom. I'm like, tweet that. And you're so right. You know, in terms of Wade and I were talking about this over the weekend, and he said something like, you know, we get to choose. You know, we kind of get this sense of, oh, you know, this external things are happening. And obviously, as you said, we are recording this in the middle of kind of pretty intense social distancing rules and everyone working from home and so on. And he said, you know, we do get to choose, and we get to choose every day how we want to be and what we want to think and what we want to feel. So I love that you've said that. It's almost like, you know, each day is a blank slate, whereas actually we drag so much heavy shit from the previous days and weeks and months and years into that, you know, stuff even potentially going back to our childhoods. But I love that you said that. Thank you. I want to ask you, how are you coping with ISO life?
Oh, Lorraine, I shouldn't say it, but I'm liking ISO life.
You know, you said that to me in the text, and I was like, so am I. Like, and we need to obviously be very clear that my business has been impacted in a big way. I know yours has too. So it's not like we're sitting here going, you know, it's all great. You know, the money's rolling in and everything's super easy. And you know, you do a baby in July and you don't kind of know what kind of world they're going to be coming into. Yeah. So, but I think what you were saying, and I think you and I are so similar in this, it's the forced slowdown. You know, I'm really relishing that. It's also forced me to prioritize so much. It's like, well, no, I can't be going out. I'm sitting here interviewing you here in my, I don't know if this is an interview chat, in our bedroom, and I've got, I actually packed away all my speaking clothes into, like, you know, those big vacuum bags, and I packed away all my summer stuff because, like, just the autumn's in the air now this weekend, so, like, I'm just going to pack away my stuff. And so there's a level of acceptance, and, like, okay, but I can't be going out doing 17 different things in my business at the same time right now. It's like, it's pretty much down to 4 different things in my business, and that's it. And I think the 4 slowdown. Any other reasons you're liking it?
Like you said, the fourth slowdown, like usually this quarter, fourth quarter of the year is my most crazy. I'd be traveling. I work on a lot of developing partnerships for the company, and that means that I'm just on the road more than I'd like to be. And just the pace of work is hard and long. And yeah, even in the midst of, you know, an upcoming recession and being quite concerned about, you know, the future, I felt such safety at home, like by having the most important things right in front of me, like having my husband and my daughter and like our life and our home and having more time in that. So even though, you know, I'm working probably longer hours than I usually would, I'm not traveling and doing it across 20 different things. I can be more focused. And and also, you know, I probably in my life would have wanted to shift into something more like this, but I would have never made that choice.
Yes, that's exactly what I said to Wade. It's like it's giving a lot of us permission to do things that we wouldn't otherwise do. And perfect example, I went to this because our local farmers markets now have closed. They did social distancing for a couple of weeks and now they've closed. So I'm actually back shopping at the Whole Foods place where myself and Wade used to live. And I went there and the guy behind the till was telling me that he's at least 50 times a day they have someone coming in looking for yeast because everyone's baking.
Oh, really?
And he said it. And then 2 minutes later, this teenage boy who'd obviously just been thrown out of the car by his mom or dad to look for yeast. They're obviously just doing drive-arounds looking for yeast in all of the eastern suburbs in Sydney. And he's like, have you got yeast? And the guy was like, no. But I was saying to him, you know, when would we have learned to bake bread? Or like Wade's getting freaking obsessed about our back garden right now. Like we've got four vertical farms going. He's bought another four his friend in Canberra.
Lovely.
So, you know, it's all this kind of thing. Like it's given us permission to make some big shifts that I don't think we would have made otherwise, because we'd feel like, you know, what are people going to think? Or, but there's more I could be doing. Like it's always about what more could I be doing rather than what I'm doing is sufficient, you know?
Yeah, I think it's this element of being able to focus inward. And I don't just mean like within ourselves, but just within our families, and like truly put our family and our homes first and then make everything else fit around that. Yes. Rather than, I feel like that's the discretionary item that gets lost, or that's gotten lost over time. You know, we've talked about over generations the amount of time that people have at home, or being parents, or the shift in, you know, household tasks and labor. And we've talked about the mental load to no end, but when everyone is at home and forced to be at home and contribute to home, it kind of makes home the center. And I know that we're lucky to be saying this, because a lot of people, home isn't safe for them as well in Australia. So it looks different for different people, but I think there is something that's happening in this season of many people's lives across the world that will change us forever, hopefully for the better.
Yeah, I think so. And I hope so. And I agree fully. So I'd love to ask you, and this is a big assumption from my end, what do you think makes our relationship work?
That's not an assumption. We know our relationship works. I think there's no BS factor. That's probably one of the biggest.
Yeah.
Like, both be totally ourselves, and we almost need to be, because we have such limited pockets of time together.
Yes, that's true. It's like we can't waste time putting on a front. We just need to get down to the nitty-gritty here.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, I don't know, like when, you know, if Kyle describes our friendship, or even like when different family members have, you know, met and seen us together, they're always like, wow, you guys are so different, but you really get each other. I think so. But yeah, I think we both just have a shared love of planning.
Yes, a shared 100%. Can I just share as well what you suggested to me, like to try and kind of force me to rest when I was pregnant? You said that you used to diarize Oprah, like you'd put watch Oprah for an hour. True. And that's the only way you could actually let yourself rest, if it was on an action item somewhere.
It's true. I have a relaxation agenda that needs to be enforced.
It's gold.
Yeah, so a love of planning, a love of getting stuff done, but also a passion for family and just trying to be our best selves. Like I think we're both not, we never think we've got it figured out, and we're always trying to figure out how we can be better people. So, and there's not many people that you meet that really like authentically are pursuing that. You know, some yes. people can say it, but they don't want to change anything about themselves or their lives. And I think that's something we've both done at different times, like dramatically change how we work or, you know, seek help from professionals mm. or just share about, you know, going through a rough patch. I think in the beginning that was a bit of a work in progress for me because I think I was a little bit intimidated by you, Lorraine.
God, why? I'm intimidated by you even now.
Because I remember
maybe that's the secret to a good friendship is to be secretly intimidated by each other.
I just remember in the early days you had some like press like, you know, hitting $1 million in the first year. It was just your face was everywhere. I remember thinking, oh man, she's going to find out that I'm just this small entrepreneur. And she's so, you were just so, what's the word? Like so fashionable in Sydney to me. Whereas I just still felt like this grumpy not-for-profit chick that's like winging it in business. But
it is funny even the different cities kind of say so much about each of us. Like you're so much more cultural than me. And I think for me, what I mean, and this, all of the above, what you just said, but I think for me, it's just that sense of total acceptance that I don't feel like there's anything that I could ever say to you that you would feel, that I would feel embarrassed sharing, you know, and even before we got on this chat, I shared something that's going on in my life at the moment that I've shared with pretty much no one else other than Wade. And, you know, that's very important to have that. And I feel incredibly lucky. I don't want to do hashtag blessed, but, you know, I'm so fortunate that there's someone in my life like that I can share something, whether it's what I shared with you today or what I've shared with you over the previous kind of eight years or so, that I never share something with you and wait for that, oh my god, you know, it just doesn't happen. You just go with the flow. And yeah, radical acceptance I think is what I feel in our relationship. And it's,
I feel that too. And it's kind of like a radical acceptance along with a, okay, let's roll up our sleeves. What are we going to do about it? Anytime I think we've come to like, or even I remember when I was in Sydney I think it was about a year ago, and I was sharing some things just about my upbringing that were hard and that I hadn't come to peace with. And I just remember you gave me some just lines of wisdom and encouragement and kind of switched my perspective a bit on seeing that. And you did it in such a gentle way that you weren't like poking or challenging me because you thought you were right, but you were seeing something that I couldn't see, and you were saying that in a really loving way. And I think that kind of goes to that accepting, you knew who I was and how I could hear something. And it was just, yeah, it just had a really big impact on my life. So
yeah, thank you. And yeah, I would say the same to you. And something that you do for me is yeah, it's like you can give me, it's like you listen and you'll hear, but you know, it is solution orientated at the end of the day as well. And but I never feel like you're telling me what to do or patching, because I'm such a ridiculously independent thinker. Like if I get any sniff that someone's telling me what to do, I'm like, ah, you know, probably 90% of myself and Wade's arguments come from that one thing. And so, you know, that sense of that you could almost slip it in under the door, you know, that it's there, it's impactful, but I'm very open to it as well, because I'm not very open to a lot of people in that way. So I appreciate that massively. And what's one thing that I have taught you, and I'll tell you what you've taught me.
Oh, just one thing. Oh my gosh, I want to think of like a really practical thing.
Yeah. And most people have said this.
Like, and then for just from a practical point of view, rhythms. Like you are the queen of setting up healthy rhythms in your life to make life work for you. And I remember in the early days of the business and trying to figure things out, like you making me read Rockefeller Habits.
Oh, how good is it?
Yeah, it's so
good. Still rave about that book.
Talking to me about like quarterly planning and annual plans, and that just totally didn't just shape the business, but just shapes my life really. Like I think I live and breathe rhythms now. So it's brought so much peace too. I mean, it sounds like such a dry functional thing to say, but it's not. It's like these rhythms give you peace and freedom to be able to do what you want with your life. So you've given me more peace than you would know just by teaching me that. And I think the other is like just from a person to person point of view, like seeing you grow in your journey and the risks you've taken. I think just, you know, not to hesitate, being fearless about making a dramatic change if that's what I want, if that's where I head. Like seeing you make moves across the years has always made me like just second guess what I'm doing right now and think, is this what I really want to be doing? Should I be being more bold and picking a different direction, or am I happy with this? So I think like you've inspired me just to reevaluate where I'm at and push into taking bigger risks if I need to.
Oh, thank you. And I think for me, it's that sense of, I don't know, I think I'm going to balls up like trying to articulate this, but I think you approach everything you do with such love. And you know, what you just shared about your mom being someone that always told you when you'd done a really good job, like that makes total sense to me now. Like, as in, it helps me make total sense of you, because you take me aback sometimes because you pay me such beautiful compliments. And it's not like your shoes are nice or, you know, what did you do with your hair? It's, they're really deep, thoughtful, considerate things that you will observe in me, and not just me, obviously, but everyone around you. And I can only imagine being your daughter. I mean, my God, it must be incredible to be Ashna, and to have Kyle making all that amazing kombucha as well. Like everything to do with you. So I think for me, it's realizing that you can, how can I articulate this? It's, you can be really kind and really loving and really beautiful to people and still get ahead. Does that make sense? Like it doesn't need to come at the expense of, because I think the whole myth is like you need to be a bit of a bitch, particularly if you're a woman, you know, you need to be a bit of a ball breaker to go out there and build an incredibly successful business like you've built, or you need to be an absolute pushover and have no personal kind of, not pushover, but a, almost like just blend in with your husband and do whatever he's doing in order to get ahead in your relationship, or to lose yourself fully because you've become a mom. And I feel what I see with you is you approach your life, and what you've learned me is that it is possible to approach your life from a position of loving yourself and doing the work on yourself and loving the other people in your life and doing the work with the relationship with them and with your team, and still like almost like make quantum leaps forward in your life. Does that make sense?
It definitely does. It's so sweet. I love you saying that, Lorraine.
I think I've done a really poor job of articulating it, but I hope
not at all. I think like, I don't know, I feel like you're putting words to that, the purpose of business being a bit different, you know, like rather than seeing business and growth is as you're growing this thing to make it real, or you're growing numbers on a sheet month by month or year by year. Instead, it's like, who do I want to be in this life? How do I want to live? And how do I want to be remembered? And then blending that with work rather than separating that from it.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, that's the thing. It's bringing it all together as one cohesive unit rather than being all these different versions of yourself in different areas of your life.
Because I still remember that convo that that we've had so many, but the ones where, you know, you're talking about all these things that you love doing, like you love writing and you love mentoring, but yet your business at that time was on this path where it wasn't set up to do that, and you just decided, I'm gonna forget what is materialistically on the list of what I should do, or even, to be fair, the brand that I've built, only I'm gonna push into what my heart and my passions and my skills are dictating, and it's going to be radical. And you did it anyway. And I think that's like the epitome of it, right? Like being who you want to be in this life and having work fit into that.
Yeah, I never looked at it in that perspective. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Honey, you've been amazing. I could honestly sit here happily, obviously because you're my friend, talk to you for hours. Is there anything else you feel like you would like to share with people listening, or anything you feel like we haven't covered?
I don't think so. I think the main thing I was thinking about in this podcast is just what an incredible audience you've built of,
you know, people amazing.
They're so amazing, people that are so keen to, you know, work on themselves and work on their businesses and just try and build a life that's, you know, beyond what they can see now. And yeah, I just wanted to encourage you guys and say, I watch you from the outside and I think you're amazing, and it's not easy. It's difficult, but it's worth it. So keep going.
Oh, my love. Thank you. That's amazing. I love that. Thank you so much for joining me. I feel like once you've had this baby and you've kind of reared them to a certain point, we need to do a podcast together or something.
Yeah.
So much fun. There's a few friends. I was like, I'd love to do a podcast with you. And you're definitely.
I'd love to do it. We should do an Instagram live after this live, you know, and I'd love to like do Q&A and meet some of your people.
Oh, that is the best idea. Yes, that would be so cool. I know. Oh my God, you just give me, I mean, this is why you do what you do, obviously, because you're an amazing, amazing digital strategist. But yeah, that would be so cool to have people on, do the chat, and then we're going to be live next week.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I've just gotten into lives recently, and I've just realized how easy and personable and fun it is. So
much fun.
Yeah. Bring it on.
Oh, I'd love that. Thank you. I'll send you a check for that. I'll do it in. What do they call them here? I always get the an electric transfer. I'll send you a funds transfer for that idea. Thank you. All right, my love. Thank you so much. Yes,
thank you, Lorraine. Bye. Thanks for being my great friend.
Thank you for being my great friend. So there you have it, my amazing Rishenda. I'm sure having listened to our chat that you will understand why I am such a raving fan and why I'm just so touched and privileged that she considers me a bestie as well. If you want to connect with Rishenda and her business Integrity, you can go to integrity.com.au. That's N-T-E-G-R-I-T-Y. So basically Integrity without the I at the beginning. And you can also find Rishenda on Instagram at Rishenda Vermeulen. She and her team are actually live on Instagram every day, Monday to Friday at the moment, fielding audience questions on everything digital marketing, tracking, advertising, everything. Those guys are on there. They've been on at 10 a.m. every morning for weeks now, and they're continuing to do that because they're just finding they're getting such a positive response from their audience. So yes, you can catch the Integrity team and my beautiful Rishenda on Insta Lives every day at 10 o'clock Monday to Friday. So I feel quite sad. That's the end of this season. Maybe we'll do another chicken soup conversations later on this year, another season. But as I said, please do let me know your thoughts. What would you like more of? What would you like less of on the show for the rest of this year? Because I am in full create mode right now on that. And speaking of creativity, my new program, which is launching next week, is all about helping you lead a more creative life and getting those creative projects that you might be sitting on maybe for years, even helping you to bring them forth into life. So really, really excited to share more of that with you next week. So just remember to get my emails. That's where everything goes first in my world. So sending you much love. It has been an absolute delight doing this season, and I hope that it has provided the level of reassurance and comfort and also escapism that I wanted to create with this season. So until next season, much love. Thank you for being part of this week's episode. It was remarkable to have you. I am always keen to hear your thoughts, questions, ideas, and suggestions for future topics for the podcast. So please get in touch on Instagram. My handle is at Lorraine Remarks, and through my website, lorrainemurphy.com.au. If you're enjoying what I'm putting out here, please do rate, review, or subscribe to the podcast so more people can find out about it and we can build this special community. Or even better, do all three. Chat to you next week.